This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And in-house is Steve Carter, former state representative, former tennis coach at LSU, former star tennis player, and associate athletic director at Tigertown, a real fixture in Baton Rouge. And he is running for mayor of his city, Stephen Frank Carter, and good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. How you been?
Doing well, and last time you were with us, you had just lost a Senate race by 4 votes to Franklin Foyle, and it looked like your political career was over at the age of 76, but you've decided to get in this race. What happened?
Well, I thought Ronald Reagan did a pretty good job, and he was fairly old when he was, you know, president. So I said, well, let's give it a shot at a good old ripe age of being mayor. And as you know, I've lived here all of my life. I went to public schools here, and then I was at LSU, and was in the Air Force for 5 years and came back to Baton Rouge. That's my home. And I love Baton Rouge. And I think, you know, the mayor's doing a good job, but I just think we have an opportunity to be even better than we are right now. And I'd like to try to you know, become mayor and attempt to implement some of the things that I've always thought would make this an even better city.
877-217-5757 is your number, and talk@talklouisiana.org is our email. For Steve Carter, born October 29, 1943, Baton Rouge, and Scorpio Steve is back for another run, and he's lost only one race, and it was by the closest of margins. Franklin Foyle got in a runoff with Beverly Brooks Thompson, and in a largely Republican district, he won going away, and Steve Carter, of course, would have won as well had he been in the runoff against Dr. Thompson. But he's now running for mayor. It's a crowded field, and the front page of today's paper says GOP figures donate to Democratic challenger. These are people who in the past have been supportive of you, Eddie Rasponi. And Lane Grigsby, they're going with Tara Wicker. Does that disappoint you?
No, not really, because they initially I wanted to run, but I had a knee playing tennis. I tore my knee up. And so long story short, it took 3 or 4 months because of the virus and what have you to get operated. I was operated in the middle of June, and I would not have run because it's a painful operation, and I just didn't have the energy. But the last week, the last of qualifying, I started feeling great. My wife and I talked about it. A number of people called and said, why don't you qualify? You know, we like the candidates that are Republicans, but we need to have an option. Would you be interested? And I said, I'm interested. Let me see how I feel at the end of the week. And at 4 o'clock, my wife put me in the car, and we went, and she pushed me out of the car. We qualified, and I feel great. I mean, I'm really fortunate to be in the position I'm in, and I've got great people around me. And I know a number of people because I've made a lot of calls mm-hmm. and asked if they would support me, recognizing the fact that some of them had already committed, and they had. And Eddie and Lane have always been friends, and I respect that. And I just have to move on and find other people that are interested and want to contribute, and we'll move on from there.
Well, sometimes people like Grigsby and Rasponi contribute to multiple candidates. You think they're just going to stick with Wicker for this go around?
I did not want to put them on the spot. They're good. They're very, you know, dear friends of mine, and they know that they can contribute if they'd like to. I've asked them to contribute. They may, but I wasn't going to press them. I just, you know, Jim, times are tough right now, and businesses are tough. And it's I don't mind. I love people. I wish I could knock on doors, but you can't knock on doors now because of, you know, the virus. And in talking to a number of people with their businesses being in the situation that they are, I don't mind asking for money, but I just don't want to put them in a position where, because mm-hmm. businesses are down, that they're uncomfortable, you know, contributing. But I'm doing well. I know the paper said that we hadn't raised any money, but you got to realize that I've only been in this now right at 2 weeks. And I've made a lot of calls, and we do have money now, but the campaign finance was due on Wednesday, and that gave me a week and a half. So I'm doing a lot better. Everybody's very responsive, and I think we're in pretty good shape right now, to be honest with you.
877-217-5757. And we certainly will endeavor to talk with all the major candidates in the mayoral race. And Steve Carter is a major candidate. There is no doubt. A late entry. He mentioned he's 7 weeks removed from knee surgery. And when I say knee surgery, a knee replacement.
Correct.
And you're moving around pretty well.
Unbelievable. I mean, I'm shocked. You know, if people would ask me would you do it again 3 weeks ago? And I said, heck no. Now I say, absolutely. I've got a very good PT who works me hard, and when I get out, I'm stiff and sore, but my flexibility is good. I can move well. I don't have any pain. I'm excited.
Well, are you surprised that Grigsby and Risponi, who is, you know, are ranking Republicans, are going with a Democrat in this race? What kind of strategy is involved in this?
Well, I assume, because they went with Tyra, who's a good person, have been on the council, that they're not too satisfied with the current situation. That's, you got to accept that. So they probably interviewed a number of people, and they feel like that based on the situation, that Tyra is the best of who were out there at the time. I was not out there at the time. And so I'm not surprised, because as you well know, Lane, he thinks out of the box a little bit, and he does things that people don't expect. And Eddie is unbelievable. I love Eddie to death. And Eddie, I'm sure, is trying to do what he thinks is right. As I understand it, he was very big with Bodie White when Bodie ran. And he loves the city as I do and as Lane does. And I think probably he thinks that Tara at that time, was the right candidate. I'm not sure if he thinks the same way now. Hopefully he has some interest in me, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Well, we saw Sharon Weston Broome beat Bodie White 52-48%, and a listener, Jerry, notes that this parish has gone for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. It went for Foster Campbell over John Kennedy. It went for Mary Landrieu over Bill Cassidy. It's become a blue parish in these major races, and mayor's race is a major race. Maybe they thought they had a better shot of winning with a Democrat.
But they probably did. And you know, a lot of people say, you know, you may not have a good chance of winning. Well, I look at it like this. When I was in the legislature, I worked with everybody. I'm not someone that, you know, is sticks in the mud saying, you know, I'm a Republican and this is the way it is. Example, the gasoline tax. I mean, the Republicans, some didn't think that's
the
right.
They killed you over that.
Yeah,
probably cost you your seat.
But it's tough break. I mean, it's the right thing to do. And that's how I am. I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to try to do the right things. I think our city has unlimited potential. And I want to work with people. I want to bring people together. I want to do a little bit better job with economic development. There are a lot of things I have interest in what I think we need to do. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. He only lost by, 4,000 votes?
Yeah, last time.
And there, as you look at where the voter turnout, they had a number of areas, like in my area, which is Bocage, they didn't turn out to vote, and that hurt. And I think I can get them to turn out to vote this time, assuming I'm going to make the second primary.
Well, if you make the cut.
Yeah.
And the conventional wisdom remains, and it can be wrong, but it remains that one of the African-American candidates will make the cut, and likely the mayor, and one of the Republicans will make the cut. That's the conventional wisdom, but obviously Risponi and Grigsby are trying to maneuver it where Tara Wicker runs against Sharon Weston Broome in a runoff. So we'll see, but Steve Carter would seem to be positioned well in making the being the top vote getter on the Republican side, but he's got some formidable candidates. Matt Watson is certainly a strong candidate, as is Jordan Piazza.
Correct.
So we'll see. 877-217-5757 is your number. Let's go to Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Steve Carter.
Good morning, Mr. Carter. I have two brand new knees also. So I know what you went through, okay?
By the way, did you do both at the same time?
The doctor said my knees were too big. He wouldn't do it. But I had Dr. Easton, and he was great. He was really great. My problem is it's hard for me to look at anyone seriously that's dealing with Mr. Lane Grigsby, whether it's Cleo Fields, you or that other guy, you know, from all the way back. I see what he does.
All right. Well, Steve has defended Lane Grigsby on this show and in other places, and I know it has to be a disappointment that he's not officially with you, but you're expecting him, it sounds like, to be with you in a runoff.
Well, you know, yes. And I've, to be honest with you, when I made my call, I did not talk to Lane. I talked to Eddie. And I have not talked to Lane. But Eddie made it a strong point, saying, you know, we did not know that you were in the race. We've studied the candidates. We think Tara is the one that can lead us, for the next 4 years. And I'm with him now. You know, Lane is a lightning rod. There's no doubt about that. But in my heart of hearts, I think Lane tries to do what he thinks is right. Now, that's just me, and I hope he is. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't think Lane tries to do anything where he gets, you know, gain out of it some way, somehow. I think he just thinks I would enjoy knowing and making sure that I'm a player in this, and we put the right person in there to do the right thing, you know, for whatever, you know, position it is that he's supporting.
All right. Well, a listener notes that Lane Grigsby memorably told Stephanie Regal that he was the kingmaker. Now he's trying to be the queenmaker. Tara Wicker
That's a good
is
one.
His candidate. We'll talk more with Steve Carter, 877-217-5757. Your number. Back to the phones in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email, and we have a bit more time with Steve Carter, who is a former state lawmaker, 3 terms in the Louisiana House, and now running for the mayorship of East Baton Rouge Parish, the largest parish in the great state of Louisiana. 877-217-5757, Patrick in Innisfil Estates. You're on the air with Steve Carter. Good morning, Patrick.
Hey, Steve, I guess I'm leaning towards voting for you right now with all the candidates that's out there. I haven't agreed with everything you did. Like, I didn't agree with the speed limit on trucks. You tried to get through the legislature. Of course, it didn't pass. But not a fan of Matt Watson. I think he's very left-leaning. And what I don't understand, though, y'all were talking about Tara Wicker, and I know this doesn't have to do with Steve so much. But I don't understand why Lane Grigsby and these Republicans, and I see this with a lot of Republicans on Facebook, are supporting Tara Wicker. I think she would be worse than Sharon Broom. She would actually be effective at pushing a left-wing agenda versus Sharon Broom, who has been pretty much ineffective at pushing anything.
All right. Your thoughts, Steve Carter.
I do not know Tara that well, but I do know that Eddie and Lane would make sure that they vetted all the candidates. And if that were the case, I doubt that they would support her. I think having been in the council, I think she's worked fairly well with the majority of the people. And I'm not so sure that's the case, but if you think so, I appreciate you voting for me and continue to think that way. It's okay with me.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to get in with Steve Carter. Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Hi, Henry.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Steve.
Good morning,
first of all, I want to wish you all a happy Edwin Edwards' 93rd birthday today. I have one question. I've been listening to y'all for about the past 20 minutes, and my ears are working, and I think my brain might be working a little bit, too. I have yet to hear one reason why we should replace Mayor Broom. She's done wonders about helping to keep Baton Rouge together, hadn't been totally successful, but she tries, and she's not controlled by anybody. Thank y'all.
Yes, sir, and I understand. I'm not one from a political standpoint to say anything negative about anyone because everybody – it's tough to get into the political arena. And I applaud people that do sign up and that do have suggestions and ideas. But let me just say this. There are an awful lot of things that I think we should do in this city. I don't understand why – and I know Mayor Broom, and then we always talked about the synchronization of lights. That's been going on since Pat Screen. And the other day she said, you know, we're going to synchronize the lights. Well, it just infuriates me that we have problems in our city with traffic. I don't understand why when the interstate gets clogged up with a wreck, people flow off the to the various subsidiaries in Baton Rouge. You go to Chicago and they got policemen out there to direct the traffic, when there's a problem. We need to think more in helping the people and do a better job of giving part of their tax money back to them to ensure that they have a good quality of life. I don't understand why, and I live off of Corporate, the creek that goes through Corporate Boulevard is just full of grass, full of trees, full of, and I'm sure money enters the picture, but you got to have a priority. We got a drainage problem in this city, and we need to make sure that we get the doggone creeks and streams and what have you cleared out. And it just infuriates me. And I know people talk about litter. And I mean, it's just a priority. You have to go into a situation where you've got X number of dollars, and you got to determine where you get the best buck for your money. And I just don't think we're doing some things that we need to be doing to move this city forward. I mean, how many cities have two major universities in it, the Mississippi River? They got an awful lot of positive things that we should be doing with this city. We need to bring, and I know she's tried to bring people together, and I'll meet with anybody. I'll talk to anybody. We need to make sure that we all work together. We need to make sure that we do a better job of economic development. You know, I go to Cincinnati every year to a tennis tournament. There are not one, not two, but five or six Fortune 500 companies in Cincinnati, Ohio. In our state, we may have one. Why don't we try to ensure that we bring in a couple of middle-sized companies into our area and allow them to grow into Fortune 500 companies? I mean, I'm willing to try anything. As you know, when I was in the legislature, I got criticized. This gentleman before was saying, you know, the trucks. Well, you always have accidents, it seems like, involving 18-wheelers. Slow the suckers down. Put them in the right-hand lane. I'll try anything.
All right.
All I want to do is make this a better city.
Jim in Woodstone. Jim, you're on Talk Louisiana with Steve Carter. Hi, Jim. Good morning to you, Jim.
When I was very involved with the charity hospital system, we had the Bogalusa Hospital and the Earl K. Long mainly under our group. And the North Shore group in the state would come together and give Bogalusa anything we wanted. We have never had that unity of our representatives from the Baton Rouge area coming together and doing everything. It's so splintered that everything's for their own little bailiwick and not for the city in general. What could you do to unite the Baton Rouge delegation and the legislature and make them support Baton Rouge as a whole rather than have tunnel vision?
Well, that's a great question. You know, when I was in the legislature back in 08, we put together what we call the Capital Region Legislative Delegation. There were 30 of us. It represented nine parishes. And we met, we talked, we tried to make sure that we were all on the same page to do what was best for the Capital Region, the area. And we did a pretty good job with it. We worked with the chamber, we worked with LSU, we worked with Southern, and there are a number of things that we did to improve those areas. That's what I want to do here. I want to bring people together. I want to ensure that we all are on the same page. It's time for us, as you say, not to be splintered, but to work together. But you got to realize now, you have a city council, and they're elected by their constituents. And so they want to make sure that whatever it is within their areas, that they get the best bang for their buck. And you got everybody trying to do that. Well, we need to meet and come up with a priority and ensure that whatever it is that we need to work on, we're working together to try to improve the city and the surrounding area.
Diane at LSU. Hi, Diane. You're on with Steve Carter.
I have a question for Mr. Carter. You talked about traffic, and they're going to widen I-10. It's just in about 3 years, it's going to be the same number of people. It's the same going to be the same traffic problem. What we need is another bridge. We need another bridge. We don't all this money into widening I-10. I don't think it's, in the long run, it's going to make a whole lot of difference.
I agree 100%. You know, that's a state situation, and we worked when I was in the legislature to get to the point right now where there is a group that's attempting to try to get another bridge. Another bridge is going to take probably 10 years to get done by the time you go through all the environmental, and, you know, there's controversy a little bit with the mayors along the Mississippi River from Plaquemine to Port Allen as to where this bridge is going to be located. So there are a lot of problems in trying to solve the problem with a new bridge, but I'm all for it, and you're absolutely correct. We do need a new bridge.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Steve Carter.
Hey, Mr. Carter, do you support Stronger Together or the separation of the St. George right-wingers?
Well, the situation right now is that obviously the voters voted and their voices were heard. Now it's being challenged in court. What we need to do is to let it run through the system, see what the outcome is. And once we determine what the outcome is, then we need to sit down with St. George and with the Baton Rouge area and work together to make sure that we have the very best possible city that we can have.
877-217-5757. We're about to go to a break, but we'll slide in Jay in Mid-City. Jay, you're on the air. Please be brief with Steve Carter.
Sir, if you become mayor of the city, when construction is done with the city of Baton Rouge, would you ensure that they contract to hire citizens of Baton Rouge, black and white citizens, instead of all these immigrants from Honduras, Guatemala, and Nicaragua? Thank you.
Okay. You were a bit muddled there, but would you bring everybody in as far as construction and allowing everybody a place at the table?
Why not? I mean, you know, so long as they're legal immigrants, obviously, I think that they need to be and have the opportunity to work and to get involved with these construction projects. Absolutely.
877-217-5757. A bit more time with Steve Carter, then Denny McClain. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 for Steve Carter. Candidate for mayor at the age of 76. Is that a factor? We talked about it earlier, but if you serve out your term, you'll be 80. If you serve two terms, 84. If you serve three, like Kip Holden, 88 and out the gate for Steve Carter. What do you think? Can you do it?
Well, you had on Edwin yesterday, and he sounded like a spring chicken. I feel great. You know, if you ask me how old are you, I'd sit there and physically and mentally, I feel like I'm about 42. So we'll just have to let it run its course, and hopefully I'll have to make that decision.
You've never had any major health problems, have you?
No.
The knee thing, was that your first orthopedic surgery?
First. Only other one I had a little bit of a
tennis elbow.
And you know who I corrected it? Jimmy Andrews.
Really?
Yeah.
You went to James Andrews?
And when I walked in there, they had all these – it was a Monday, and they had all of these professional football players lined up on the wall because of Sunday's ball game. And he saw me and said, come on back, Steve. So I go back there, and he talks to me. And I said, Jimmy, you got fatter fish to fry than me. You got all these other guys. He said, why are you here? And I said, you told me to come look at my elbow. He looks at it, and he says, Diane – I assume that's what his nurse was named – what we got tomorrow? We're booked. Cancel 10 o'clock and throw Carter in. So that's how I got my – he was great.
Well, reflecting back on Henry's call, and you talked about going against the grain in the state legislature. I think Patrick referred to this as well. But you proposed that gas tax, and I think 17 cents, and you did so as a Republican. And you probably ticked off enough people in your district that it cost you a chance to be a state senator. After all, you only lost by 4 votes. Why is there this pushback to any kind of tax measure?
You know, the first time we tried to do it, the bill wasn't as good as the second time. The second time we did it during an election year. So why is there a pushback? You know, the Republicans just look at taxes as being bad. And we had a number of people in the legislature that were Republicans that they were just scared to pull the lever to have a tax increase. Yet all over the country where they did raise the gasoline tax, the number of Republicans that got reelected was like 99% of them. So that's part of the problem. But again, Jim, the problem is that we just are reluctant to do the things that are necessary to improve the quality of life of our state. You've got people in North Louisiana who have bridges that are out, and they've got to go 40 miles around to deliver their products. That's not right, but it takes money to correct it.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes for Steve Carter, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Bill Huey sends this message. I support Tara Wicker personally, but given what he says, the diabolical deviousness of Lane Grigsby, I believe his and Eddie Rasponi's support of her is just a way of weakening Sharon Weston Broome for a Republican. And by the way, writes Bill Huey, Jordan Piazza is not a strong candidate, and Roy Fletcher won't make him one. By the way, Jordan will be with us next week if things go according to plan. But I'm sure you're viewing this as a race with a lot of people who are serious about the winning. They're not in it just as a lark, and Jordan is one of them.
They should be, and they have ideas, and people need to listen to the ideas. I'm just saying, for the general public, to put your name on a ballot and to step up to the plate and pay the qualifying fee, I admire anybody that gets into public service. It's not as easy as people think that it might be, but it is very rewarding when you have an opportunity to make a difference. And that's what I'm in it for. I love trying to do new things, think out of the box, and try to improve the quality of life for all of the citizens. Well, at the time when I was in the legislature, of not only EBR, but the state, but now obviously our parish. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's a golden opportunity, and I look forward to it.
All right. Another listener. This is Tracy at the Capitol asking if you would welcome debates with the other candidates.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's what needs to happen. You need to visit with people. You need to talk to people. And you need to have people ask questions, and then the voters need to decide who they think is the best candidate and who will do the best job, you know, for the parish.
All right. Here's a devilish question from Jason in Goodwood saying, is your previous support for the president a detriment in a blue parish? I think you were on this show and said you had voted for Donald Trump, but if that's otherwise, please let us know.
No, I voted for Trump and always wrote Trump. I don't have a problem with that.
You'll vote for him
again? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. With the choice we have, absolutely. I mean, I know that it's controversial, and I think he gets himself in trouble with his Twitter and sometimes his mouth. But I think the country is better off right now, and I think he's done a great job for business, and I'm very pro-business.
Well, things are kind of tough right now.
Well, that's because of the virus, and you just have to wait and see where you are with the outcome of it. Hopefully, we'll have a vaccine pretty soon, and we'll go back to normality. Because I'm telling you, Jim, at 76, I've had an unbelievable life. I've traveled where I wanted to go. I've traveled all over the world. I've visited people. I've been to every baseball park in the country. I took my son at 10 years old and traveled to see every capital in the state. I've had fun in my life, and I want other people to have the same opportunity.
Yeah, well, you have had a full life, Steve Carter. 28 spring trainings, by the way, I believe.
Yep.
So, well, good luck on the trail. Let's have you back before the election, and thanks for coming in today. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Jim.
And we're joined now by Dennis Dale McLean, the great right-hander for the Detroit Tigers, who, of course, has been viewing the national pastime, as the rest of us have, from a different perspective during the COVID age. And good morning to you, Dennis Dale McLean.
Well, we'll always be able to call it the past time, won't we?
Well, you went through a weird season in 1967 in which riots interrupted the Detroit season and probably cost you the pennant.
That was one of the things that cost us the pennant. But I suppose the biggest thing was because I didn't pitch for a month. I was out for a month. I'd already won 17 going into late August. And lo and behold, I hurt my foot, sprained it. In the locker room, and just couldn't pitch anymore for the rest of the season. And that's what really caused it. As a matter of fact, Jim Campbell, most people in Louisiana won't know who he was, but he's the president, general manager of the Tigers for years and years and years. And he's a legend in the world of baseball. And Jim tried to trade me and Elk, because they didn't win it in 67, they tried to trade me and Kaline to the Minnesota Twins. All winter long in 67. So Campbell also always used to say after we found out about it, he said it was the greatest trade he never made. So, things worked pretty well.
Yeah, well, I'd say so. Next year, the Tigers did win it all, and then he won 31 games, and nobody's come close to that, the highest 27 by Steve Carlton and Bob Welch in all the years since. And now there have been 42 of them since 1968, 52 of them. Since 1968. So there have been a lot of seasons and a lot of pitchers, and now pitchers can lead the league with 16, 17 wins and lead the whole league.
Unbelievable.
And with the
16. See, but I don't, and you know what I don't understand, Jimmy, is that DeGrom, as good a pitcher as he is, and he's really got good stuff. I don't understand. This has got nothing to do with DeGrom, folks. Please, I'm not disparaging DeGrom because I wish I could still pitch like him. But DeGrom had won 10 games one year, I think, and 12 the other, and won the Cy Young twice. That makes no sense to me. Don't you have to complete games? Shouldn't you have to win more than 10 or 12 games? So that means that the other 50 guys that win 10 games a year should be candidates for the Cy Young? I don't think so. You know, so they've really readjusted and redefined some of the awards right now. And I'll tell you, with these 60-game schedules and all the other rules they want to put in eventually over the next 5 or 10 years, you know, the game is going to be redefined in one form or another. Nobody bunts anymore. Nobody knows how to bunt anymore. No one knows how to hit and run or run and hit. It's crazy stuff. It's the game is changing. Everybody wants to hit a 400-foot home run.
You're right about that. And you mentioned complete games, Denny. In 68, yep. You had 28 of them. The year later, 23. You won the Cy Young both years and won 55 games in those two seasons. Now you're right. You got pitchers like LSU's Aaron Nola, who's with the Phillies, one of the best in the business, making $11 million right. a year. He's never had a yep. complete game in his career in the majors. That's the nature of the beast right now, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's just amazing. It just, you know, and what we used to do, and I don't know why they don't do it today other than they think that by pitching six innings and 100 pitches, boy, I did my job tonight. One of the pitchers with the Tigers, I won't identify him, but one of the pitchers from the Tigers, we had a 50-year reunion a couple of years ago for the winning of the World Series in 68, and one of the pitchers with the current Tigers, still with the Tigers, said, "Isn't it a wonderful thing, guys? All we got to do is pitch five or six good innings, 100 pitches, and they think mm-hmm. we're a star." Think about that. I mean, they don't have to win. They just got to pitch well.
Now, I believe Mike Marshall was briefly a teammate of yours.
He sure was.
And he holds both the American and National League records for most games pitched by a pitcher in a season, 106, by the way, in the National League. He believed that the more you pitched, the stronger your arm got. Was he wrong? Because that's heresy now.
I think to a degree, Mike Marshall didn't throw like the rest of us either. He kind of threw a little below three-quarter arm. And he did a lot of stuff, sidearm and what have you, and that takes a lot of strain off the arm. The way I got better and better and better is I was a bowler. I used to bowl 100 lines a day during the winter, every winter, until about 69 or 70. And it put my fastball, according to what that technology was available back then, my fastball went from 93, 94 up to 97, 98. With the bowling all the time and just getting my right side of my body stronger and my legs. Pitching is legs. People don't understand it, and unless somebody can explain it to you, you know, you don't get it because everybody thinks pitching is all arm. It isn't. It's legs, the butt, and then the turn and things like that. So people just don't understand that you can work out a little bit as a pitcher, but I've seen a lot of guys lifting now 500 pounds, for God's sakes, and all they do is they make their pitching starts a little bit shorter than the last time.
We're going to spend a few more minutes with Denny McClain after this short break, but those of us old enough to remember his high leg kick, reminiscent of Juan Marichal, the great San Francisco pitcher, and Denny McClain did it better than anybody else in his prime of 68 and 69, 55 wins, 15 losses in a two-year span. But at 25, his arm was damaged and his career was never the same. How will the COVID age affect the players who are trying to make their way through this? We'll talk about it with Denny when we return after this message. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing, and your number 877-217-5757. We're talking with Dennis Dale McClain, the great right-hander from the 1960s Detroit Tigers. And when he was a young man of 22, he was a starting pitcher in the American League lineup against Sandy Koufax in the 66 All-Star Game, and he was a star from almost the day he entered the majors. As mentioned, 1967, there were riots in Detroit. Part of the season was suspended, and Detroit ended up losing the pennant by a game to the Red Sox. And now baseball in the COVID age is trying to do a season with 60 games. And, of course, we've already had many games postponed because of the outbreak of COVID-19, particularly among the Miami Marlins. Denny, how does this affect the players, both mentally and physically?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, first of all, let me tell you that as far as affecting a player, and I'm no longer a player, former player, but I will tell you that right now I'm under a COVID watch. I started running a low-grade fever last weekend, and I went and saw my doctor Monday, and they did the test, and he said, "I don't think so." He says, "But you just stay quarantined for a couple, three, 4 days so we get the test results back." Well, as you know, the problem with the test results, nobody gets them back in 2 or 3 days. And that's what we're waiting on right now. We're supposed to get them today or Monday, and hopefully it's today, because just sitting around and doing nothing is horrible. And as far as the guys go, listen, if they don't respect the game enough to stay out of the elements and go way out of their way to avoid the elements, shame on them. Because the money they're making, the opportunity they're getting in their lives, improving your life in such a dramatic way just when you sign your first contract in the major leagues is beyond anyone's imagination. Do you realize the major league minimum today is $550,000 a year? Just the first-year player who steps on the field. And I'm telling you, it's an opportunity, and how most of the clubs are doing well. I guess the Dodgers haven't had one at all. Nobody has tested positive. The Tigers have had a couple up here in Detroit. But the Marlin thing was just an anomaly, I think, because according to them, it was not in a gentleman's club, we found out recently. So, you know, hopefully they've learned from all of that. Hopefully the commissioner is going to enforce this. And if he doesn't enforce it with money and suspensions, then the guys will never learn, because the only way you get somebody's attention, Jimmy, I think we all know, is take their money.
Huh. And when you mentioned that $550,000 major league minimum, that is more money than you made in your whole career, isn't it?
That's exactly right. I made $442,000 in 10 years. So they still owe me $100,000, right?
Yeah, and you were the highest paid player in the game for a year or two, and that was right around $100,000, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was it, 100, 110, and then the Mickey, of course, Mantle, deservedly so, playing in New York and in the Big Apple. Mickey, I think, got up to about 200,000 a couple of years. Al Kaline got up there eventually. He deserved it too. And Al, of course, just passed away a couple of months ago. Mr. Tigers, we used to call him. But you know what? What amazes me about the game is how it just gets up and goes to work again tomorrow. And tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day, and how we are manufacturing in some form these players. They're bigger, they're stronger. Do they play better? We don't think so. The guys that play in the 60s just don't think the pitching, we think. I think the pitching leaves a lot to be desired. When you hit this many home runs, folks, the pitching can't be good. It's plain and simple. Just watch the games. So somebody did 7 home runs the other night in a game. One team, 7 home runs. Now, does that tell you how good the pitching is?
But this is from a man who, when he was at his peak in 1968 and had an ERA under 2 runs per game, you led the American League in home runs allowed. Part of that was the park you were pitching in, but you were not afraid to give up home runs as long as there weren't a lot of men on base, right?
No, I had one general rule. If I'm ahead by more than 2 or 3 runs, I would challenge every hitter with fastballs. I hated to walk people. I walked very few people. But so let them hit it. I mean, nobody's ever hit 400. No one's ever hit 500 in a very long time, 400, Ted Williams being the last guy. And the pitching back then wasn't that good. It was during the war period and what have you. That's not to disparage Ted. But the bottom line was there were a lot of circumstances that allowed him to hit 400. But today's kids, listen, if the pitch I said the other day when Judge has already hit 7 or 8 home runs, I said, my God, the guy's going to hit 75 in 60 games.
Break Bond's record. Wouldn't that be something?
That's right.
Our previous guest, Steve Carter, he said he'd been to 28 straight spring trainings before this year. Did you like spring training? Did you like going to Lakeland, Florida?
I loved the flight down there. I hated it every day going out there and, you know, running a little bit every morning, throwing the ball. That was the best part of it. But sitting around and having to watch a ball game every day for no purpose other than to get in a little bit better shape, because most guys, when they come to spring training, are ready to play. But, no, I was not a big fan. I used to – what eventually happened is I wound up playing a lot of golf, and we were always let go. Normally, the roster guys, the top 25 guys, would be allowed to go if they weren't playing on that day, and we'd go – we just play golf every day, golf or do something crazy, so – It was a good vacation period, especially coming out of Detroit.
Now, I would say that you know, some pitchers have butterflies even late in their career, particularly on opening day. But you're a guy who was playing the organ hours before starting the World Series, the first game in St. Louis in 1968. Not much got to you, did it?
No. We had a great team. We had a great time. It was the best baseball team I ever saw. And we were in the Fox Hotel down in St. Louis the night before the World Series started. And we were there till 30. I mean, we were there, the whole team, almost 20 guys. And we went out there, and we didn't know it, but we ran into Gibson that day when he was striking out 17. I mean, Jesus and all the angels could not have beat him that day. I'm telling you, that's how good he was. The best ball game I ever saw pitched was that game in St. Louis that day. So, but you know what? Despite that, we still won it in seven games, and we're very pleased that we did. Believe you me. Well, because they would have hung me.
Yeah, well, Gibson, as we know, was an unusual guy, and I was told that he wouldn't even throw curveballs in All-Star games because he didn't want the opposing catcher, a guy he might face later in the season, to see his stuff.
You know, I don't know how much of that folklore is true, but he didn't need much of a slider or a curveball or anything else. He had great stuff, excuse me, and as long as he kept the ball down, Bob, in a sense, if he kept it down and tried to keep it away, man, listen, you're not going to hit him, especially a guy throwing the ball in 97 or 98 miles an hour.
Hmm. Now, and the listener notes that it was 50 years ago, a few days ago, that Doc Ellis threw his no-hitter when he supposedly was strung out on LSD. Do you buy that?
I don't buy it a word of it. I mean, in LSD, you know, that was a horrific drug, they say. And the guys that I know who used it, they said they didn't even know their damn name once they took it. So I don't know how he could even find the mound or the dugout if he was that high. Listen, he was selling books. That's what it was all about, selling books. They either write about drugs or they write about women. So both of them are supposed to be tantalizing, and we're all supposed to go out and buy the book because of that. But no, no one ever bought it. None of the players bought it, that's for sure.
Well, you were in the game before the steroid era, but were amphetamines present?
Yeah, we had a ton. Our doctors would bring them every day. We had different colors for different things. But again, the doctors brought them. They brought them into the locker room. They brought them into the training room. And there were guys who lived on them. I mean, that's the easiest thing I can say. There were a number of guys, probably a third of the team, that lived on them. And it was too bad, but you know, it is what it was, hopefully, Jimmy, the worst problem in our game at that time was alcohol. It was alcohol. Once the game was over, boom, I mean, guys would sit in there and drink 6, 8, 10 bottles of beer before they went back to the hotel believe it or not, a sandwich.
And you were drinking Pepsis, lots of Pepsis.
And I was still drinking Pepsi, and I'm still drinking Pepsi.
Now, Denny married his beautiful bride, Sharon, the daughter of Hall of Famer Lou Boudreau, when you were teenagers. You were together until the end, and the end came for her last December. And it has to be an immense loss. But in this age, in this COVID age, with this isolation, I suspect a guy like you loves people and loved her. You're about to lose your mind.
I am. I'm having a very difficult time with it. I've had a bout of depression that I think is being handled pretty well right now. But I'm just, you know what it is? It's the loneliness of it. That's what it is. It's not that I miss friends or what have you. It's just the loneliness that at this point in time, especially with me being monitored right now for this disease or virus, you know, all I do is watch Netflix all day, for God's sake, because I can't go out, and I don't want to, God forbid I've got it and I give it to somebody else, I'd never forgive myself. But, you know, it's something you got to battle. And somebody said to me, one of the docs said, he said, just look at it this way. 1 minute, 1 hour, one day at a time, you'll get through this. But if you want to try to get through this by jumping to the next week, it'll never happen.
A listener asks if your childhood hero was Mickey Mantle. He was born at a time when it would have been just about right for him to be your hero. And, of course, you had a history with him.
Oh, yeah, I had a great history with him. My game is last home run in Tiger Stadium, number 535, would put him ahead in the record books for the Yankees all-time list. And he was my guy. When I was growing up in Chicago, it seems strange, but Mickey Mantle was the iconic legend in baseball while he was a player. He was a legend while he was playing. You can't say that about very many people. And it's the way everybody wanted to run like he ran, slide the way he slid, and did all the other things that major leaguers do. And if we could all imitate his ability to play, we'd all be hitting 350 this year.
That's right. Denny was about the same size as the Mick and became the top pitcher in the game at the end of Mick's career. Financial support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. We'll be back Monday. Have a great weekend and stay tuned.